This is Line One, your health connection, a weekly program produced at the studios of KSKA. Each week, KSKA's host, Dr. Thad Woodard, puts you in touch with local and national experts in a variety of health and family issues. Opinions expressed are those of the host, guest, and callers, and do not represent those of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. Here's your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
Good afternoon, and welcome once again to Line One. Before I introduce our guest, a couple of issues. One, I've been asked to remind our listeners down on the Aleutian chain around Umnak Island in Unalaska, kind of south and west of Dutch Harbor, that they may be exposed to some minor ashfall from the Umnak volcano. It remains active. Just for your information, the volcanic ash often is a very, very fine kind of ground glass-like product. It's extremely small in size. It can easily irritate the upper airway, your nose and throat, but it's small enough particles that it can also penetrate down into the lungs. And those people with respiratory illnesses should avoid contact with outdoor air, or if you're going to be outside, do something to kind of cover your face so when you breathe, or seek more information from your healthcare advisors, providers in that area. Second, just to kind of stay on top of some of the issues regarding mercury and the measles vaccine, the National Institutes of Health have recently canceled a trial intended to examine the use of an oral chelating agent called DMSA. It's recommended. It's estimated 2 to 8% of families or parents are using this product. And what that product does is it binds heavy metals such as calcium and iron, but also mercury. And there's been a large and vocal group of the public who believes that mercury, either in the vaccines or elsewise, is causing autism. There is virtually no significant scientific evidence to support that. Nevertheless, the National Institutes of Health felt that it was enough of a public health issue to try to research the issue. However, it was stopped when some research suggested that in experimental animals that with normal lead levels suffered some neurologic damage when being treated with this product. And that raises lots of ethical concerns. One, you've got no plausible mechanism. You're giving patients or children in particular some oral medications that may cause side effects. And so the trial was stopped. And I just remind everybody, when you're thinking about treatment, you want to keep in mind, is the product effective first off? And then if it's effective, is it reasonably safe compared to not treating? So there's a couple of issues we've kind of hammered home several times. And It's a dangerous issue. I am aware of at least one significant lawsuit and a death in a child using intravenous chelating agents for the treatment of autism in this country. So it shouldn't be taken lightly, particularly with such a lack of evidence to suggest that mercury is an issue. My guest today is Vince Bonham. Vince is the chief of the Education and Community Involvement Branch of the National Human Genome Research Institute at the National Institutes of Health. He's a specialist in particularly in family health history. He's been up here this last March at the South Central Foundation talking about it, and that's where we learned of him and the importance of this whole issue about family health history, particularly in this age of increasing knowledge about genetics and particularly in the environmental effects on genetics. Mr. Bonham, thanks very much for agreeing to be with us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here this afternoon.
Well, let's start with the basics. What do we mean when we use the term family health history?
Well, family health history is really the history about the health conditions and diseases in your family. So as you think about your biological members of your family, your parents, your siblings, your sisters and brothers, your grandparents, your aunts and uncles, information about diseases and conditions that they may have, and understanding how those health information may connect with your own health, so really learning more about genetics. We often say that family health history is the first genetic tool that you can use to help to understand how diseases run in family and what you can do about it.
You know what? When I first learned of you and started researching for this program, I realized that the Surgeon General had actually launched a national initiative about family health history. Could you perhaps maybe get into this a little bit more deeply as to why that would be such an important issue that the Surgeon General would make such a move?
Yes. So this was a initiative that was led by initially Surgeon General Carmona in 2004, and has been supported by the Surgeon General's office and the Surgeon General since that date. And it's important because it's important to help Americans understand the value and importance of knowing their family health history for their own health and the health of their children and their grandchildren. And so really this initiative has been a collaborative of the National Institutes of Health and the National Human Genome Research Institute in the National Institutes of Health with HRSA, CDC, and the Office of Surgeon General, and the Department of Health and Human Services, and really as a department working together across the various units to promote the importance of collecting family health history within families and how that it can be valuable with regards to providing care by your physician.
All right. Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Line One, your health connection, and our topic today is the family health history. We're going to be getting into some of the ethical medical issues of genetics and how that might interplay with your family health history and affect individuals themselves. And if you've got questions or comments about anything you hear today, you can reach us in a number of ways. You can call us directly at 550-8422, 550-8422, and our toll-free number, 1-800-478-8255. And you can also reach us by email at lineone, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. Remember, this program repeats between 7 and 8 each Monday night, so if you're listening then, there are no questions that can be answered. So if you've got comments or thoughts that come up, why don't you give us a call or drop us an email. Mr. Bonham, before we get too much further into the basic story here, which is extremely interesting to me, I'm very interested in genetics increasingly, but I got to ask the question, and most of the time I'm talking with attorneys or healthcare physicians or healthcare individuals, and you're an attorney, and even more interesting, you're working for the Human Genomes Research Institute. It's got to be somewhat of an interesting story.
It's been an interesting maze, my life and my career, and I guess a message to all the students who have an interest in medicine and science out there, but also have an interest in other fields, that there may be opportunities for them within the field of science that may not be at a bench. So my own career is, prior to coming to the National Institutes of Health, I was on the faculty at Michigan State University in the medical school, teaching medical students around health policy issues. And as part of my own research, I was doing research with regards to community concerns around genetics and genomics and what did they see as the important policy issues for the state and the federal government to address with regards to the field of genetics and genomics in their communities. And so that work and other work that I've done around diseases where there have been a genetic basis to them and disparities in health really brought me to the National Institutes of Health and the National Human Genome Research Institute. So bringing my last 15 years of working in the field of medicine and really as an intersect of policy, science, and medicine in addressing the issues of reducing the burden of disease and improving the health of our country.
Okay. And one more brief digression before we get back to this topic. I've been very interested in recognizing that certain law schools, particularly the Brooklyn School of Law, is beginning to offer more science for judges and lawyers. Science and technology is becoming such a big part of our culture that it seems to be more important to be educating others in that regard. What comments might you have about that?
No, I totally agree with you that it's key for all members of the public to have a scientific foundation and a basic knowledge to make informed health decisions and decisions about policies in our country. But particularly judges and lawyers have an opportunity and a responsibility. I'm going to have the opportunity this fall to be part of a panel teaching judges, both federal judges and state judges across the country, around issues of importance of genetics that they may be involved in at the bench. So the issue of understanding basic scientific knowledge is extremely important for many different disciplines. And as we think about the issues that are coming up with forensics and issues related to that, it's important for judges and lawyers to understand that, but also issues related to health and understanding the basic genetic information and biology so that they can represent their clients in the best way and to help them in making informed decisions.
Okay. What is typically included then in a family health history? And I think I say that realizing that most physicians are trained to get that information, but often it's left to filling out a piece of paper or a few cursory questions. But what should be included? What's important? What are you trying to get us to be doing as physicians and patients?
Well, I think this is one of the reasons why the Surgeon General launched this initiative was the need for families, individuals, to collect as much information so that they can provide it to their physician or other health professional. So you want to collect information about your family members, your immediate family. Again, your parents and grandparents, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, and your children, around specific medical conditions or diseases that they may have, or diseases that may have caused the death of someone who has died within your family, the age of onset of that disease. So, for example, if that individual has breast cancer, was the onset of that breast cancer at age 30 or at age 70? That's important information to a physician, as well as other kinds of information about the environment in which they live in. Information that may be helpful in understanding with regards to health conditions and diseases that may be within the family. But the core is to collect information about your biological representatives, your relatives, as well as key information about the types of diseases and conditions and the age onset.
You mentioned that the environment is important, and maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I really enjoy where this is taking us. Why is the environment important when we're talking about such things as lung cancer or prostate cancer or heart disease or many of the diseases we hear so much about today?
Well, I think the number one reason is that you can't change your genes at this point in time, but we can oftentimes change our environment or our behavior or influence it in some type of way. So an example that often is used is smoking. Clearly, smoking has a major component, environmental component, in lung disease. But there's also a genetic basis to lung disease. And to change your behaviors with regards to smoking or other kinds of activities may help to prevent that type of a disease. And so understanding the context of the environment that you're in is extremely important in improving your health, because today that is what we can change and have an intervention to improve the health of individuals or to modify the activities within a specific family. But the areas of understanding that in relationship to the genes is extremely important.
So the genetic basis may give us risk or protection, but the relative exposure to certain injuring environmental things may cause that expression to be different in one individual, may occur earlier in one individual or another. Huh?
I think that is correct.
Yeah. I just using my own family, unfortunately, I guess as an example, I had two parents that smoked quite a bit right after the war. Each were two or three pack a day smokers. Both died of smoking related illness. One of them, bladder cancer, which is the major risk factor, and the other, emphysema. So the question often you might ask is why not lung cancer? Why bladder cancer in one? Why emphysema in another? Why is it some people can smoke quite a bit and never get lung cancer? And the answer is there's probably some genetic interplay with the environment is what we're talking
about. That's right. That there's clearly an interaction going on, a variety of information. And so how can we change our behaviors and intervene within our environment to improve the health, I think, is a key core issue at this point in time. And so as we learn more about the human genome, then we can take that information to have greater impact and hopefully reduce that burden of disease. I think another example of a disease where the issue of the environment is extremely important is diabetes. Clearly, we are finding significant evidence about the genetic component of diabetes, but there's also clearly behavioral components and issues with regards to lifestyle, diet, a variety of things that are key to your risk of diabetes. So understanding what may be your genetic risk and how you potentially can change that with changing environment. Many of the diseases that are common in our country and the world are what we describe as common complex diseases. Mm-hmm. It's not one gene that's involved. There's multiple genes involved in causing the disease, but also your environment. And the environment is the area where we have an opportunity to make a difference.
Okay. So there's a couple of issues there that I'd like to kind of focus on. One is the difference between the genetic component of let's say type 1 diabetes versus these complex illnesses like asthma or cancers where there are multiple factors, multiple genes perhaps, and environmental influences. So there are diseases where getting one copy of a gene has a very, very high risk without almost any environmental impact of that likelihood of that being manifest is pretty high.
That's correct.
And then there are other illnesses where, say, a father, somebody my age, I'm 60, my father or mother had type 2 diabetes that developed in their 40s or 50s, and I'm worried about getting it. Knowing that they had that, some of this family history may help me do some preventative-like things and may help physicians screen for it a little bit more effectively, I guess, is some of what you're talking
about. Yes, and so, you know, issues around heart disease, a number of different cancers where that kind of information is important, both with regards to screening. So, for example, colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
If it's identified that you may have a genetic risk for colon cancer, then you may want to just start screening earlier so that there's an opportunity to identify whether you have the disease very early and make a change in behavior or identify a polyp that's maybe in your colon. So you can change screening behaviors with certain types of disease if you know you have a genetic risk, as well as it's important with regards to changing health behaviors, the interventions with regards to diet and lifestyle and activities, which can be extremely important. I think one of the other things that's important to recognize as we think about these differences of the different kinds of diseases that affect families and how genetics plays a role is that there are a number of conditions that we describe as single gene conditions or disorders, like cystic fibrosis or sickle cell disease, where if you have that mutation in that gene, you will have the disease. But there's other things going on also that may have an impact on how the disease presents itself and the expression of the disease. So we are just beginning to learn a lot of really exciting things from the human genome. This last 2 years has been really exciting about identifying gene variants in common disease, learning new information about diseases that we thought we knew a lot about in the past. And we're just beginning to see where these opportunities are going to provide us for new therapies and treatments that will hopefully improve the health of our communities.
Let me remind our listeners once again, you're listening to Line 1, your health connection. My guest today is Vince Bonham. He's joining us by telephone from the National Institutes of Health, where he is chief of education and community involvement with the National Human Genome Research Institute. We're talking about the importance of the family health history. If you've got questions or comments, our local number, 550-8422. 550-8422, toll-free number 1-800-478-8255. And you can reach us by email at lineone, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, all one word at kska.org. So this is another, I guess, focusing on this family health history, making it a critical component of interaction between patients and providers is opening up a broader way to address prevention is another kind of way of thinking about this.
That's correct. It really is providing a new tool, new information that can be helpful with regards to prevention and reducing disease. I think one of the things I want to make sure I highlight is with the U.S. Surgeon General's Family History Initiative, there has been created an electronic tool to assist families in collecting that information, where you can actually go online and put into the tool information and then print it out and take that to your physician so that your physician can then have a conversation with you and have that new information as they're making decisions with regards to appropriate screening for you and making judgments with regards to what potential risks you may have related to disease. And so I encourage your listeners to go to www.hhs.gov/family history to look at the tool and to find out the information from the various parts of the Department of Health and Human Services that's on that website.
And let me just also remind our listeners, you can also go to the KSK.org Line 1 website, and you'll have links to that that website, which is to help you, you know, to create and save your family health history, as well as a couple of other websites. And then there's a PDF a file there as well, which is on an excellent book called Your Genes, Your Choices, Exploring the Issues Raised by Genetic Research, which was too big for me to print out. I did look at it at some length, but it's got some very good, interesting information about some of the ethical and legal issues, which some of which we'll probably get into here a little bit later. But so there's a couple of things at that website that would be of perhaps some interest to individuals. What about genomics? When we use the term genomics, how does that, what does that mean, and how is that tying back into this initiative about family health history?
So, as you stated, I work at the Human Genome Research Institute, and our research is focused on the field of genomics. And genomics is a relatively new term that describes the study of all of a person's genes and including the interaction of those genes with each other and the person's environment. So when you think about genetics, you think about the study of one specific gene. If we were looking at a specific gene and trying to understand that gene and understanding how that gene may be involved in disease. But when we think about genomics, we're bringing all the genes together within your human genome and looking at them together and how they impact with environment. And so it's really looking broadly at the issues with regards to how the human genome works and its ability to influence health and disease.
And there are increasingly being used in hospitals, including at Providence Hospital here in Alaska, genetic counselors. So there is a sources of for individuals who are more expert in helping discuss some of the concerns around genetics in a family. Is that an area that you think we'll see more and more use of by the public?
I think we definitely will have more experts involved in day-to-day care of individuals. And so genetic counselors play a major role in assisting families in understanding information that they're learning about their genome or the risk of disease for a child and understanding adult risk of diseases related to genetics. So genetic counselors play an extremely important role. However, there's not that many genetic counselors across the country. So primary care physicians and nurse practitioners will also play an important role. And so it's really bringing the experts like geneticists and genetic counselors together, working with primary care physicians and nurse practitioners and other types of health professionals to better use this information. Because really genomics and our understanding of the human genome is going to become an important part of all our clinical care. And so the genetic counselor is going to be an extremely important role, and I'm great that there is a genetic counselor there at your hospital in Anchorage, but also we'll have to have primary care physicians and other health practitioners across the country who are knowledgeable in using that information to help with your health.
I think, speaking as a primary care physician, we're certainly being I don't know if bombarded is the word, but we're certainly being I'm impressed with the amount of information that's coming out about the genetics. Some of it's pretty complex, but it is leading us slowly to spend more time talking to families about their risks and what they do. I'll give you a kind of a typical example that may help people understand why this is important more. I do a lot of childhood asthma work, and we're aware that a lot of people with asthma, as they get older, or children, they get much, much better. People think they outgrow it. But there are small groups of individuals who have very significant changes in their lung function, and making it a very high risk for them to have very severe and early obstructive or chronic lung disease as an adult. And we're beginning to learn how to pick those individuals out with some testing. And certainly that leads to advice like there's certain things you shouldn't smoke. It's easy to tell people they shouldn't smoke, but this is a group of families that definitely don't want to smoke. They don't want to work in a coal mine. They don't want to be around certain things that may bother them. And that's just a very simple example of how not only our increasing understanding of diseases, but also of the environmental risks for diseases can change how severe each of a person would be. So asthma is not just asthma, is just asthma. There's certain severe, more aggressive forms like diabetes or cancer.
Right. And as we're learning more about the genome, we're better able to understand those differences in the disease so that we can identify the appropriate therapies for individuals, which is really a part of the excitement that's going on in the field of genomics.
If you were to look down in the future, maybe 5, 10 years, what do you see as changed? Is what will you be doing different? What will be becoming much more important than it already seems to be right now in this field of understanding your family health history and how that interrelates to genetics?
Well, I think the key area is around personalized medicine, where your health care and guidance and directions and treatment is much more personalized to your own individual situation and your own genome. And so that's really the future, is the ability to tailor drugs to individuals at a higher level, to understand individual risk related to drugs, helping with regards to dosage levels of different drugs. What's been described as personalized medicine is really part of the future over the next 5 to 10 years. What is also exciting that's happening right now is that the cost of actually genotyping is going down dramatically. The technology has moved forward so quickly over the last 10 years, the costs are going down dramatically, and that it's likely within the next 10 years we will be able to each have our own genome sequenced and have the ability to use that information and have our health providers have that information to use in our care. And so that is a benefit that of the, an excitement, as well as it raises a number of other ethical and policy issues, but it's an excitement about the future over the next 5 to 10 years.
Let's. You made a comment about dosages of medications, and maybe not everybody follows the line of thought there. So that genetics leads us to understand that each individual may metabolize or break down and remove medication, drugs, toxic exposures at different rates, which is dependent on genetics. So that one person may get by with a whole different dose of medication, whereas that same dose could potentially be injurious in another individual.
Right. And again, if you start to think about that and think about some of the drugs that we all have had where we've reacted negatively to, as we learn more information about that and to try to avoid those situations and to try to tailor those drugs with regards to the dosage level that's best for you as an individual.
Are there ways for individuals such as a person who's adopted to do a reasonably good job relatively easily about getting some of the health history of their family if they were so inclined?
Well, you know, this has been a difficult area because, you know, as I started out, one of the key things around a family health history is to know information about your biological family members. And for someone who's adopted, they clearly don't have that information as readily available. But many states are beginning to collect more information to provide to individuals that will give them more information about their health, as well as that there are various clearinghouses that can also be helpful to individuals who are adopted. So today there's more information that you can track down than, say, 20 years ago. But clearly it's still a barrier with regards to understanding all of the family health history information that you would have if you were not adopted. So it's a challenge, but there's more information available today than there was a few years ago.
How about other we're kind of moving, or I'm trying to move towards some of the legal or ethical issues regarding more public or universal knowledge of a person's health history. What are some of the big issues that you think of that people should be aware of or may have questions about?
Well, I think the major issue is the potential discrimination, that the information could be used to harm you in some kind of way. And one of the most exciting things that's happened over the last 6 months is that our country, Congress, passed in May a bill called GINA, Genetic Non-Discrimination Act, that was signed into law by President Bush, that provides a level of protection for individuals' employment-related activities as well as activities related to health insurance. And so what GINA does, it specifically prevents discrimination from health insurers and employers and protects genetic information of an individual, which includes genetic test results of an individual, genetic test results of a family member. And so that information has a level of protection across this country today that it did not have 6 months ago. With the passage of the law in May, the federal agencies are now involved in developing the regulations for that law, which will take effect in 1 year. So this was a major milestone with regards to protection. We've had a patchwork of state laws across this country. So if you went from Alaska to Washington, then to Oregon, you would have three different laws. But now we have a floor, a base foundation of law that's provided by the federal government that protects certain genetic information from use by health insurers and your employer. And so that's a major area that's been a real stumbling block, but has been addressed at one level.
Other issues medically, ethically, that are important besides the discrimination aspect of health information from keeping you getting insurance or health insurance, for example?
Well, there's a whole new area within the field of genomics that is both exciting but raises a number of, I think, important ethical and policy questions. And that's related to direct-to-consumer genetic testing and genetic services. We now have on the web a number of companies that provide direct services to individual consumers where they can send in a DNA sample and then be provided certain information. And it raises the questions of the quality of that information that they're receiving, whether the individual can understand the information and make informed decisions related to that. And how do you make the judgment with regards to who should be able to provide that information? Do they need to have a physician involved? Or how do you decide the limitations on the use of that type of information? This is a whole new area that's going to be important both from a government perspective but also from a community perspective of what is the appropriate framework for direct-to-consumer genetic testing. There are companies that have been focused on ancestry testing where they'll take a DNA sample and provide you information about your background and your identity. And it really raises the questions of how we understand our history and our identity and whether that information really is providing you something of value in understanding your ancestral background or only such a small component of your ancestral background that it's really not meaningful. And so it's raising these kinds of questions of how we understand these issues. The issues of understanding risk and assessing risk is a challenging area. As we're learning more information, it's also becoming much more complex to communicate that information to individuals so that they can understand it and use it. And so can we come up with new and better strategies to communicate information around genetic risk to the public and to patients? So these are all areas that are just beginning to open in front of us that really raises a number of challenging issues, but also, I think, opportunities for individuals and communities related to genetics. But there are clearly challenges with regards to making sure that the buyer beware when they buy services online and talk to their doctors and talk to their health professionals about what they're doing, but also to be extremely careful to make sure that those organizations that they're working with are appropriate.
Let me remind our listeners just one more time. This is Line 1, your health connection. My guest today is Vince Bonham of the National Institutes of Health and specifically the National Human Research Institute. And we're talking about the importance of knowing your health history and sharing that information with your physician and talking with it about it with someone who is knowledgeable so that we can use that information to do the best for your health. If you've got questions or comments, a couple of ways to get a hold of us. You can dial us directly at 550-8422, 550-8422. Our outside toll-free number, 1-800-478-8255. And you can email at line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. And remember, we've got about maybe 20 minutes or so left. You can listen again tonight as the tape rebroadcast between 7 and 8. And at any time, you can go to kska.org and download this podcast or even subscribe to have it sent on a regular basis. Or you could share this podcast with somebody else that you might want to share it with as well. Is there a specific example of the comments you were just making about using genetic information that you might obtain by sending in some blood tests that would mean a little bit more to our listeners? Anything you're aware of that's happened specifically?
Well, I'll give you an example of two different kinds of companies that are providing services and the kind of specific things that they can provide and some of the challenges of that. So there are now at least three companies out there that offer what are described as genome scans, where they look across your genome and look and identify gene variants that have been documented in research studies as being variants related to a risk of a specific disease. And they can now give you that information. But one of the questions it raises is, what does that information really mean to your health, and how could you use that information? So it raises the question of the kind of value of that information. So related to prostate cancer or diabetes, they can give you information that you may have a specific gene mutation or variant that has been identified as a risk for a specific disease, but will that give you valuable information? These services cost anywhere from $1,000 to $2,500. Some of those services provide genetic counseling services, but they raise a number of questions about the use of the technology and both the ability for an individual to make decisions for themselves and to be in control, but also the potential of understanding the information that they receive from these companies. The second area is really around ancestry testing, and there's been work I know done in Alaska as well as in other parts of this country to better understand various communities and using genetic information to understand ancestral background. But when we think about our identity and our communities and where we are from, it's not really always in our genome. It's also within what our culture is and our families and how we understand that. And so whether that specific information that they may provide you about specific markers, genetic markers that may identify certain background information about your ancestry, does it give you the full picture? Does it help you understand whether you are from a certain part of the world? And how do we use that information? In my own research, I'm very interested in how physicians understand human genetic variation. There's human genetic variation across the globe. but we're all 99.9% alike. And it's that 0.1% that we're focused on with regards to the variation. And how do we understand that and relate that to how we identify individuals by ethnicity and race and other types of ways that we look at individuals as groups within our world? And so questions about how we use that information are becoming much more complex from the perspective of understanding identity and ancestry. And it's a way that it's extremely important that we're thoughtful and careful as we use genetic information to put shed a light on that specific area.
If or what would you hope that both listeners and healthcare providers are changing or doing with this information about the importance of having a family health history that is robust as we can make it?
Well, with regards to healthcare providers, I guess the primary issue is the ability to actually use the family health history information that's provided by the patient to really to take a look at that information to better assess the care and appropriate screening for that individual patient. I would highlight for healthcare professionals a organization that is working with the National Human Genome Research Institute and other areas of the National Institutes of Health to help health professionals understand genetics. And it's a group called the National Coalition for Health Professional Education in Genetics, or NCHPEG, N-C-H-P-E-G. And they provide a number of services to health professionals to help them with regards to their knowledge related to the value and the importance of use of genetic information in their clinical practice. So one of the things that's clearly been supported by a number of research studies is that really physicians don't really focus in on genomic information in their clinical practice on a day-to-day basis, but many of the common diseases that they are presented with have a significant genetic component to it. And so recognizing that and how they are looking at that and making judgments with regards to screening and therapies is extremely important. From the perspective of the public, the patient and the family, I guess one of the groups that I would really want to communicate to, and those are the parents and the grandparents, and collecting the family health history for your children and your children's children, because it really is a gift. If you're able to collect information around the health issues within your family and have that information documented for your children and for your children's children, when you're not there to communicate that information, the information is there. And in many families, including my own, we didn't talk a lot about diseases in the family and who died of a specific disease and that kind of information, but it can be extremely important. And so that ability to provide that gift to other members of your family by collecting that information and maintaining that information is just as valuable as maintaining information about the culture and the history of your family so that that child or your great-grandchild can understand a part of who they are. And as we learn more, as we've talked about this hour, about how the human genome influences health and disease, you'll have that information available for your healthcare provider to use it to appropriately benefit you and your family. So I guess that's the message, is that that your family health history is a gift, and it's a gift for your other members of your family and for you to share that with them. And from the perspective of the healthcare providers, to recognize that family history is one of the cheapest but one of the most valuable genetic tools that you have within your toolbox of things to provide for the care of your patient.
I can't today, given the importance of healthcare costs in our society, not help but think about the effect of everything we discuss on costs. And you know, I don't know the answer to this question. I'm wondering if it's been looked at or thought about or not. Is as we as providers are beginning to look harder at the health history and maybe are identifying risks that a family may have. And then we might say, well, you need to exercise more. You need to avoid this kind of contact with certain environmental things. But we also may be beginning to use or even abuse testing prematurely or inappropriately. And so what I'm driving at is there concern about this is another thing that might get raise our healthcare costs in this country, and that would become a limiting issue in some way.
So there is research going on around these specific issues of how genomic information or individuals' perception of risk influences testing and cost of healthcare. Clearly, one of the things that is projected is that ultimately this is going to help reduce costs because having a much more individualized or personalized health care can reduce some of the major issues with regards to inappropriate treatment and therapies or therapies that are going to cause more harm than good. And so clearly there are potential ways to help improve the quality of the care in a much more focused care. But there are issues that we need to be thoughtful about, and you know, I'm familiar with research that's been done really looking at the issue of individuals' perception of risk and whether they go then to the physician and ask for a test and the test is ordered. And so by having much more concrete genetic information to go along with that will hopefully help providers in making the best judgments about who should receive certain services and who should not. You know, we've been in a situation where those that came in and had access to care and the appropriate coverages received that care, and those that did not receive the care. But whether that care was the most appropriate care for that individual has been a question. And so this is an opportunity for us to use genomic information along with other information. And clearly a message that I want to make sure your listeners hear is that, you know, genetics does not determine your health. But along with the environment, along with all the social things that go on in your life, have an influence in that you can take that information and help to assess to hopefully give the appropriate test and the appropriate treatment, which will help reduce the cost. And so this is part of the question that we have as we enter the genome era and enter the era of using genomic information in clinical practice. And that we need to make sure that we stay on top of and study to make sure that it is not really creating a harm with regards to additional costs that are not of value. But clearly, when you think about the major diseases that we have in this country, genetics is really a part of most of those diseases. And so how can we learn from genomic information to better help improve the health of individuals and reduce the burden of disease, including reduce the burden of the cost of disease?
So
it's an open question for us.
Sure, sure. And you mentioned the professional website for more information and education on genomics and genetic information, in particular with healthcare, and we've put a couple of websites, including the CDC and the Mayo Clinic, which will get our listeners, if they want to some more websites. But what I'm asking is, are you aware of a very specific website that might be more appropriate for the public that wants to know more information, or can they get onto that from the Family History, HHS.gov website as well?
Yes, I encourage all your listeners to go to the Department of Health and Human Services, U.S. Surgeon General Family Health History Initiative website, which is the HHS.gov /family history, because there you can link to information from the other parts of the federal government, including the CDC and the National Human Genome Research Institute, and it provides a lot of background information and resources. And that's a key place to go for information. But if you also put into your favorite type of a web server, a Google or Yahoo, if you put family health history in there, a number of the federal sites will come up and information that that's extremely valuable and can be helpful to your listeners.
Okay, I'm going to try one more time to see if we can get somebody out there to give us a question. I'm sure there's a number of issues that are on people's minds, and we've got about 10 minutes left. So if you've got questions, 550-8422, 550-8422, we'll get you in touch with us. Or you can email me at lineone, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. When you mention the term risk, it gets back to this idea of science education, decision making about healthcare issues, and it's a big issue. And I have a question in my own mind: is who should be trying to address that? And let me give you a specific kind of issue. There are and have been some concerns about asthma-related information or products that may, and the important word is may, had adverse effects for health of individuals taking asthma medications. As a result, and the same thing would be true with antidepressants in adolescents. As a result, both providers and patients have steered away from these medications without proof that there's any cause and effect. And then there's been an increase in problems, particularly in adolescents. Suicides going up after some concerns about antidepressants. And I wonder if that is not more a direct responsibility of the FDA to, at the same time they may serve the public need to address particular warnings or concerns, at the same time should not make an effort to help people understand how to address the risk of that concern that's being brought out. And so it seems like it's a logical time for the FDA, the government at that time, to help people understand how to address the information that they're providing. What would you say about that? And I think it goes directly back to this genetic information.
So the FDA is working collaboratively with the National Institutes of Health on a variety of areas around how genomic information is having an impact on the work that they do within the FDA. And clearly the FDA, along with other agencies within the federal government, the National Institutes of Health, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, all have, I think, an extremely important roles here in helping to make sure that the public understands and health professionals and our ability to communicate information related to risk. But also, I think, working collaboratively with state health departments around specific issues that may be faced in a specific community is extremely important. But there's a role for many people and many organizations with regards to your specific question. And I encourage you to have someone from the FDA to come on your show and to talk about some of the initiatives that they currently have going on and how they see their role evolving with this kind of new level of information around risk and understanding that. Because as we learned about specific drugs, particularly that may only be valuable for a very small percentage of the community, but it's valuable to them, how do we make sure that those drugs are continue to have the ability to be available for that specific targeted population? Right. And so there's a number of challenging questions here related to make sure that they protect the safety of the United States citizens, but also to make sure that the quality of care is provided. So I think that there's a role for a number of agencies with regards to those specific issues.
Okay. All right. The other thing I'd like to maybe get back to in case we haven't fleshed it out or made it concrete enough for people to understand the importance is this issue of some of the legal and ethical issues arising from our increasing knowledge of genomics. Are there some interesting or even complex issues that come to your mind when you think about some of the other legal or ethical issues that this is driving?
Well, I guess another area that we really haven't talked about this afternoon is issues of privacy generally, about when you have genomic information which is put into a computer and is available, how do you protect that and make sure that that information is not misused in some way? And so this is an important area that, from a research perspective, that the National Institutes of Health has taken a leadership role on with regards to the ability to use genomic information to help in the discovery of new therapies and ways to address specific diseases, but also to protect that individual. So how do we understand this? Genetic information, it gives you information about your background and your identity at one level. And so are there unique issues around privacy that we need to be thinking about? Or is it just like any other test, like a cholesterol test or other information that you may have? And so this raises some challenging questions. There are a number of policy initiatives that have been focused and developed around research to protect that information. But how do we think about it from the perspective of, say, the criminal justice system or other organizations that may have access to your genomic information? Should we be protecting it in some kind of special way? Are there important issues of concern? How do we make sure, as a society and as a country, that we are making sure that we're balancing individual privacy with regards to the potential benefit of information related to forensics and criminal justice or other information that may be extremely important with regards to our society?
We just have a couple of minutes, and increasingly I think it's important for me to encourage my guests to really sum up the important couple of points to kind of hammer home again what's important from your standpoint, from where you're sitting, as to what we should be doing with this information we're finding out today about the family health history. What do you want to leave us with?
All right, well, I want to leave you with a couple comments, and I'm going to start by making a recognition of my boss, Dr. Francis Collins. Dr. Collins is the director of the National Human Genome Research Institute and one of the leading genetic researchers in the world. Dr. Collins and I had an opportunity to come to Anchorage about 2 years ago and speak to members of the public and individuals from the University of Alaska and the communities there about issues of genetics and the importance of genetics to their community. Dr. Collins is leaving the Genome Institute to do further work in other areas, but there's a clear message that he communicated when he was in Alaska and that I want to communicate today. And that is, knowing your family health history is extremely important to your health. And the ability to collect that information is a gift for your children and your children's children. And so I want you to understand that there's a value not just for yourself, but other members of your family by collecting that information and using that information to help with regards to your health care. The second issue is that the message I want to leave you with is that we are entering a very exciting time. We are now in the genome era, and biomedical research and science is exploding in a way that we're learning about the human genome. And it has this great potential of really improving our health and reducing the burden of disease in a way that we were not able to do 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And your involvement in research and participation from a clinical perspective in these important areas is going to be important to our country and to the world that we live in. And it's important that we also make sure that we're protecting it and guiding it from an ethical and a moral perspective. And so the challenge is that everyone is engaged and involved and thoughtful about these important scientific issues because they're important to our families and our communities.
Listen, thank you very much. This has been wonderful. Good luck on all your endeavors. If you get back up here to look us up, I'd love to interview you in a live time.
All right. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Next week, we'll be back with Nancy Whitney of the University of Washington talking about fetal alcohol syndrome. So join us Monday, August 4th at 2 p.m., repeating the same evening at 7 p.m. on FM 91.1. For KSK and for Line 1, this is Dr. Thad
Woodard.
This has
been Line 1, your health connection. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Or email us at line1@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at kska.org/line1. CD copies of this program can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA. Anchorage.